Sukkah Daf Chaf Dalet. We're in the middle of a lengthy discussion that takes us back to yesterday's Daf Chaf Gimel and Aleph, where the Gemara brought in two opinions regarding a sukkah where one of the walls is made by the use of an animal. It means to say that an animal was simply hung as a wall. And wouldn't that, in fact, be considered a kasher sukkah? Machloshin Rameir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir says it's possible, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's kasher. Back on Chav Gimel Amid Aleph, Rabbi Meir said that any wall that's made of an animal is simply does not qualify as a wall. Rabbi Meir Omer, right in the middle of Chav Gimel Amid Aleph, called Davashesh Bo Ruachayim, and also Nasa Lo Dof Lasukkah, Velo Lechel Amavui, Velo Pasan Lebeiraus, Velo Golo Lekever. And then the sheet of Rabbi Yosef Glili, which we're going to be discussing a little bit later on. But in the meantime, it's clear that according to Rabbi Meir, you cannot make your sukkah by using an animal as a wall. Simple question is, why not? What is the basis of Pshitas Rav Meir that says that you cannot use an animal as a wall of your sukkah? So in yesterday's Gemara, the Gemara brought down two positions of amongst the Amoraim. One is that of Abaye, and the other is Rabbi Zera. They both agree that for Rav Meir, it's a Gzera de Rabbanan. Why would the Chachamim go there? For our purposes right now, we're just going to be focusing on the Shita of Abaye. Abaye says that what Rav Meir is Choshesh, she's concerned, is that the animal is going to die. And as the Gemara pointed out yesterday, we're speaking about an extraordinary specific case where the animal is only just above 7 tefachim from the ground. The animal was secured in that location, made sure that there was no airspace underneath the animals, but it was about just above 7 tefachim from the ground, and being that you have the concept of lava that takes you up to 10 tefachim, so now you have a kasher sukkah. In the event that the animal were to die, so then the animal is going to shrivel, the animal is going to shrink, reduce itself to just below 7 tefachim, and you no longer have a kasher sukkah. Even with lavud, you're still under 10 tefachim of the required 10 tefachim wall that you need in order to make a kasher wall for the sukkah. That is the sheet of Abaye. And on Chaf Gimel Midbeis, the Gemara noted that Abaye seems to cross himself, as there's another stira that exists between a Mishnah and a Braisa regarding a Kohen that goes away. Kohen going away, leaving his wife who is a Bas Yisrael, but currently married to a Kohen, does she have the ability to eat truma based on the assumption that her husband's still alive? So there's a stira between the Mishnah and a Braisa. The Mishnah is of the position that a Bas Yisrael shenisal sekon v'alach v'al l'midinas yam ocheles b'truma v'ches kashu kaim. The Mishnah says very clearly that she is allowed to eat truma. No concern that the husband is dead, even though right now we don't know about his whereabouts. On the other hand, we have a Braisa that says very clearly that if the husband leaves giving his wife a conditional get on the concern that maybe he's going to die, so under those circumstances, the moment that he leaves, his wife cannot eat truma for fear for concern that he died, the moment that she no longer has any communication with him. So obviously, a stira between the Mishnah and the Braisa, Abaye gives an answer. Now, the answer that Gemara gave yesterday, Abaye's answer yesterday, is that the mission that says that we're not concerned for death is the Shita Rav Meir, and the Braisa that says we are concerned for death as the Shita Rav Yehuda. The problem, of course, is that now, as it relates to Sukkah, the way Abaye explains it, Rabbi Meir is concerned that the animal is going to die, but when it comes to the Kohen leaving his wife, so Rabbi Meir is concerned that he's not going to die, and that is seemingly a stira. You could suggest maybe there's a difference between humans and animals, but the Gemara does not make such any assertion, any assumption, and so therefore it remains a stira. So eventually what the Gemara ended up doing is the Gemara said, okay, what we're going to have to do is that we're going to once again open up with the stira between the Mishnah and the Braisa regarding the Ashes Kohen, and we're going to go with the Abaye's resolution, but we're going to flip the resolution, where the Mishnah that says that we're not concerned, that's the Shita Rav Yehuda, and the Braisa that says that we are concerned, that's the Shita Rav Meir. Fine. So, and once we do that, so then we have now clarity within the Shita of Abaye, where Rav Meir consistently holds that he's Choshesh Lemisa, both in the case of the animal being used as a wall, and in the case of the Ashes Kohen, where the husband goes away, and in both cases we're Choshesh Lemisa. Good, and now we have a consistent viewpoint within the Shita of Rav Meir. The problem is the case of the Yain Kusi. The Gemara in the Bama for Gimel Amud Bey is brought in the case of the Yain Kusi, which we go over numerous times throughout Shas, where you purchase wine from a Kusi and you do not have the current ability to be mafish from Samaisis, but you want to drink the wine. And again, without going through all the details of why that is, but suffice to say right now, you want to drink the wine. So can you drink, let's say, 80% of the wine? I'm rounding off the numbers, 85% of the wine. And can you leave off the remaining for Chumas Amaisos? Right? Chuma Gadola is only requires you to take off 2%. Maiso takes, it requires you to take off 10%. That's 12% roughly. There is, of course, Maaser Sheni, but that you could be Mechalal, you could deconsecrate that onto money. Anyway, so you'll drink currently right now 85% of the wine, thereabouts. You'll leave over 15%, more accurately 12%, and that will be deemed as Trumas HaMaisos. I need to take off the Trumas HaMaisos to begin with. So what we have was a concept called Breira, that which I leave over at the end. So Huver Hadavar LaMafreya, retroactively, that shows us that that's what you wanted to take off from the very beginning, as long as you subscribe to Breira. So this would be a valid way to take off Trumas HaMaisos. So Reb Meir is totally comfortable with this maneuver, and the Tanaim of Reb Yehuda, Reb Yossi, and Reb Shimon are not comfortable with that maneuver. Now, what the Gemara is bothered by is that now that we've given a consistent viewpoint within the Shita of Rabbi Meir, that Rabbi Meir is Choshesh Lemisa, he's worried about the animal dying, he's worried about the Kohen dying. So over here, we should have the Rabbi Meir worried about the jug dying. Okay, obviously, that's a bit of a stretch in terms of how to describe it, but hopefully you understand that that if we're going to have a consistent thread of Rabbi Meir, so he is concerned of the possibility of calamity. And so just like there's a chance the animal's going to die, just like there's a chance that the Ishus Kohen is going to die, so too there should be a chance that the jug is going to break. And Reb Meir is not worried about that. And meanwhile, Reb Yehuda, Reb Yossi, and Reb Shimon, they're worried that the jug is going to break. This is where we're up to right now in the Gemara. So the Gemara now is just going to be resolving this last issue that we just brought up. So Kashi, the Reb Meir, the Reb Meir. So it seems to be a theory within the Shita of Reb Meir. Amalecha Reb Meir, Misa Shchicha. So Reb Meir would say to you, look, as far as death is concerned, death is common. When we say that death is common, probably what the Gemara means over here is that it's an eventuality that will be true by every person, by every animal. However, as far as the jug breaking is not inevitable. In fact, if you give it to somebody who is a shomer, somebody who's extraordinarily responsible, so then the chances are the jug is not going to break. And so we could give such a very simple distinction between the case of the jug versus the case of the animal and the Ashes Kohen. The Rabbi Yehuda, Kashi, the Rabbi Yehuda, time of the Rabbi Yehuda, Lav Mishum Dechai Shabikiyas Anod. So, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, look, Rabbi Yehuda, in the case of the Ishus Kohen, was not concerned that the Kohen dies when he leaves. And as far as the animal is concerned, Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned that the animal is going to die. And meanwhile, when it comes to the jug, so Rabbi Yehuda over here is concerned that the jug is going to break. And the Gemara notes that that seems to be inconsistent within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. To which Gemara's response is, Ella. So the response of the Gemara is that as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, it has nothing to do with the breaking of the jug. That's not why he's concerned. Ela mishum deleis lebrera. So as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, his issue is that he just simply doesn't subscribe to brera. This idea of retroactive determination, as we know throughout Shas, is a major debate. Sometimes subscribe to it, sometimes don't subscribe to it. As far as the Gemara's conclusion, so elsewhere the Gemara concludes that by Doraisis were Machmer, by Dorabans were Mekel, but anyway, but just in terms of the Tanaim, so Rav Yehuda happens to be a Tana who does not subscribe to Breira. And so the reason why you cannot use the maneuver of drinking the majority of the wine, leaving over the remainder for Trumas HaMaisos, is simply because once you don't subscribe to Breira, so then we don't say retroactive determination, and therefore you did not take off Trumas HaMaisos at the very beginning, which is what you're supposed to do. Okay. And that's why Rav Yehuda doesn't allow it. So the Gemara says, really, is that the pshat in Rav Yehuda? We're going to read through the Braisa, and it seems from a simple reading of the Braisa that that's not the pshat of Rav Yehuda. Let's take a look at the end of the Braisa. Amru lo Reb Meir, they say to Rabbi Meir, they meaning the Tanaim who argue with Rabbi Meir, and that includes, look, you could look at the top line of our Amud, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon. So they say to Rabbi Meir, yeah, tamodesh amivake inod, the jug is going to break, and what you're going to end up doing is eating tevel retroactively. So aren't you concerned about that? V'amar lehu, Rabbi Meir's response is, lichishi yivaka, when it breaks, meaning, I'm not concerned about that. So that's the back and forth between the Tanaim and Rabbi Meir. So it's clear from the conversation, it's clear from the dialogue, that those who are arguing with Rabbi Meir are obviously concerned that the jug's going to break. So michlal dechayish Rabbi Yehuda l'bikias hano. The Gemara makes exactly that point. So hausam Rabbi Yehuda hu dekam the Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, no, we don't understand the dialogue. When Rabbi Yehuda was dialoguing with Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda wasn't espousing his own position. What he was doing, he was just simply speaking to Rabbi Meir on the terms of Rabbi Meir. Lidi di Rabbi Yehuda says, look, if you ask me, leis le brera, I don't hold a brera to begin with. So as far as I'm concerned, this whole discussion becomes a moot discussion. It is not relevant for me whatsoever. I don't subscribe to brera, so I don't believe you could do this to begin with. So for me, the conversation comes to an end. But ela lidi tcha, but if I could talk to you on your terms, meaning Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi Meir, I acknowledge that you subscribe to brera, I don't, but you do. Fine. But the Yesh Breira, Iya Tamod, the Shem Yivaka, I know, but aren't you at least concerned that maybe the jug is going to break? And I'm related to Chishi Yivaka, and that's what Rav Meir's response is. Number one, I subscribe to Breira, but you knew that already. And number two, as far as they're concerned that the jug is going to break, I'm not concerned that the jug is going to break. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the back and forth now between Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir. And now we have nearly ironed out the shitas of Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. We have given now a consistent thread within these two Tanaim. And if we could just now take a moment to summarize. As far as Shitas Rav Meir is concerned, Rav Meir says that you can't use an animal as a wall. At this juncture of the Gemara, we're saying, Abai is saying, the reason is because we're concerned that the animal is going to die, shrivel, and no longer be the requisite height of 10 tefachim. We also say that according to Rav Meir, once the Eishes Kohen goes off on a trip and she no longer knows the whereabouts of her husband, so now at that point in time we have to be Choshish Lamisa, and therefore she cannot eat Truma until he actually returns home. That is a second Shita of Rebbe Meir. And as far as Rebbe Meir, as it relates to the jug is concerned, the Yain Kusi, so there he's not concerned, but that's because we're talking about a jug and you can hand it over to somebody responsible, and we're not concerned that the jug is going to break. That's all the Shita Rebbe Meir. Now we can turn to the Shita Rebbe Yehuda. As far as using an animal as a wall is concerned, so Rebbe Yehuda is not concerned the animal is going to die. Therefore, you could use the animal as a wall. As far as an Eishes Kohen, so when the husband goes away, and he leaves her, so she could still eat Truma Pecheska, that her husband is in fact alive. And finally, as far as it relates to the case of the Yain Kusi, so he won't allow you to drink, but it has nothing to do with the concern of the breaking of the jug. That's simply because Rav Yehuda does not subscribe to Breira. So far, those are the Shitas of Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir, as we now have been discussing for the last off. Continuing in the Gemara, Chavdala Madalev, halfway down below Chayish Rav Yehuda Lamisa. So really, according to Rav Yehuda, we're not concerned about death. V'ha tenan Rav Yehuda. Omer, af isha acheres misafnin lo shema tamos ishto. We're going to go back to the first Mishnah of Yuma, the first daf of Yuma, where there, the Kohen Gadol going into Yom Kippurim needs preparation. 7 days of sequestering in the Lishkas Parhedrin. Also, a number of other points of preparation that are discussed throughout the first parak of Yuma. And then the Mishnah over there introduces us to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, look, the Kohen Gadol has to be married. That we all know. The Pasuk says, v'chiper ba'ado v'ad beiso. And the Gemara Darshan is ein beiso ela ishta. The Kohen Gadol needs to have a wife. That's part of the kapara of the Kohen Gadol, that he provides a kapara on behalf of his wife. Therefore, he needs a wife. Now, based on the fact that he needs a wife, well, why aren't we concerned that maybe the wife of the Kohen Gadol is going to die? So Rav Yehuda says, I am concerned about that. So what we're going to do is that we're going to have a wife in waiting in the event that his wife dies. So we'll have another wife that is sitting there prepared to be married to our Kohen Gadol in the event that his wife dies. If you can recall, the Gemara there at the beginning of Yuma spends a good amount of time trying to figure out exactly how to maneuver this so that he can be currently married to one wife, but in the event that she dies, he's then going to be married to the other wife. He can't be married to both at the same time. He's only for Yom Kippur allowed to be married to one woman. And if you recall, the Gemara goes through a complexity in terms of how exactly to maneuver, how to negotiate being married to one of the women, and then in the event that his wife dies, being married to the other woman. Good. We're not going to go over that again right now. Happens to be an extraordinarily complicated piece of Gemara. Anyway, but for our purposes, what we need to just focus on is the fact that obviously this is a sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, and he's concerned that the Cohen's wife is going to die. And that is inconsistent with everything we've been saying up until now. So the Gemara says, "Hayit Marla, I'm a Rav Huna, Bered Rav Yeshua, Malu Asa Bekapara." So the Gemara says, "Okay, so that's by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, and everything in Yom Kippur gets heightened. The stakes are higher in Yom Kippur, and so even though Rav Yehuda in general is not going to be concerned about Misa, about an animal dying, about the Kohen dying, but over here when it comes to Yom Kippur, so because of the heightened sensitivity and the heightened Kedusha and the heightened Kapara levels of Yom Kippur, so then he's going to be concerned that maybe the wife of the Kohen is going to die. It's Mala. It's a Chumra Ba'ama. But a Chumra that's imposed for Yom Kippur. Gemara continues now. Bein Laman Da'am Hashem HaTamuz. Bein Laman Da'am Hashem HaTivrach. Midareisa Mechitza Ma'al Yehiv Rabbanan Hu De'Gazru Ba. So the Gemara says, okay, let's make a summary statement. So for Shitas Rav Meir that you can't use an animal as a wall, so we have the Abaye Shita, we have Rabbi Zera's Shita, but they both agree that it's a Gzera. It's just a question of what the Gzera is, as we've now been discussing for the first 15 minutes of today's shir. So for Abaye's understanding of Rabbi Meir, it's a Gzera that the animal may die. According to Rabbi Zera, we're concerned that the animal may run away. So, but it's a Gzera Derabban, it's a rabbinic concern, which means that Minatora, the animal does in fact qualify as the Mechitza Ma'alya. It's just as Xerah de Rabban, the rabbis banned it and prohibited it. So now what the Gemara is doing is it's setting us up for a question that, quite frankly, is going to be very difficult to answer. So so that means that according to Rav Meir, that min ha-Torah, mi-ikar ha-din, it is in fact a mechitza. If the animal was in fact to be used as a golel, so that means that Rav Meir should say that it's tummy. Now, just as a basic rule, we know that a mace, when you have human remains, so it gives off tumas ohel. Tumas maga masa and tumas ohel. We've discussed this numerous times. We also know that's not just limited to the human remains, but it's also true for the aron in which the person is buried. The aron itself also is going to give off tumas mace, which means that the aron is going to give off maga masa and ohel. Not only is the aron going to give off this kind of tumah, but the golel of the aron is going to give off this tumah. Rashi consistently throughout Shah says that the golel is the cover of the aron. Rabbi Natam disagrees. Rabbi Natam says that the golel is a reference to the headstone, the matseva of the aron. Whichever one it is, so the Gemara says, but it comes out now that according to Rabbi Meir, that we know, well, before we get to that, we know that a golel has the same status of the aron, meaning that it is in fact going to be an avatum, it's going to give off tuma. So now, what should Rabbi Meir say if the animal is used as a golel? So remember, we just said that according to Rav Meir, me'ikar hadin, the animal is in fact considered mechitza ma'alya. So if the animal is in fact used as a golel, so it should give off tumah. Meanwhile, as we're about to learn, Rav Meir shita is that the animal is not going to give off tumah's golel. Alama tanam, we learned in a Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda matami mishum golel, Rabbi Meir mitahir. So we've learned very clearly in a Mishnah, Machlokes between Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir, and Rav Meir in fact says that the animal being used as a golel is in fact not going to be an avatum, it's going to be tahor. So that means to say that according to Rav Meir, an animal is not a mechitza, not as a gzera, but as a fundamental position, an animal is not a mechitza. So what it's now going to require us to do is to re-examine the entire sugya. Now mind you, by the way, this is a sugya that we started back on Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. We have now spent over a daf on this particular discussion, and in one analysis, our first analysis since yesterday, up until this moment in time, we have now given one approach within Rav Meir, which basically seems at this point in time to be an indefensible position of Rav Meir. Meaning up until now, we said that according to Rav Meir, the reason why you can't use an animal as a mechitza is not because fundamentally it's not a mechitza. No, it is a mechitza. It's just that the chacham and we're goes there because of a concern. Maybe it's going to die, maybe it's going to run away. That's the approach we've been giving up until now, but because this question of the golel, which we would expect Rav Meir to say that it's not going to be, we would expect Rav Meir to say that it is going to be tameh, but meanwhile we know Beferish that Rav Meir says it's tahor, so now what it forces us to do is it really forces us to re-examine the Shita Rav Meir and to give a whole different approach. So, one of those moments in the Gemara that after having spent the daf in one approach, the Gemara says, okay, that approach is just simply not defensible, so we're going to have to give a new approach. Ella Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Kesav Rameir Kol Mechitza Shomenes Beruach Eina Mechitza. So the Gemara says like this. We have to talk now in fundamental terms. Rameir says an animal is not a mechitza. Why isn't an animal a mechitza? So the first approach of the Gemara is because it's a mechitza Omedes Beruach. So how is it standing? It's standing by wind. Now here in the case of the animal, what the Gemara probably means is that what is animating the animal? What's causing the animal to live? So it's because the animal is filled with ruach. Now, in this case, the ruach is a ruach chayim, right? Some sort of spirit that gives it the life. But the point is that what is animating the animal, what's giving the animal vitality, what's making it stand, so to say, is the fact that it's not a concrete item that's making it stand, but rather it's ruach. It's a wind. In this particular case, it's a ruach chayim. But it's not something which is concrete and tangible. Now in a slightly different version of how we're going to say it, meaning we're going to make the same point, we're just going to say in a slightly different version. So Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Kesav Rabbi Meir Kol Mechitza Sheino Asui Bidei Adam Ina Mechitza. A mechitza that's not man-made is not going to be a mechitza. An animal is not man-made, so it's quote-unquote natural, it's organic, so therefore it can't be viewed as a mechitza. Okay, so we have two different ways now in which we're saying it. But regardless of how we're saying it in each of these ways, what we're basically saying is we're making a fundamental point. An animal is not a mechitza. Now, why isn't an animal a mechitza? So now we're going to go with one of two versions. Either what's sustaining it, what's animating it is the ruach chaim. Alternatively, it's not man-made. Now, so the Gemara points out that there is going to be a nafkamina between these two ways of saying it. And that is dukma b'no tafuach. let's say the wall is made out of balloons, inflated balloons. Now, I say balloons, just giving kind of like a modern version of it, but basically water pouches, but not filled with water, but filled with air. So you have pouches that are filled with air, and they're basically now there as the constructed wall. So over here, if the issue is that what is inflating these balloons, these pouches, is air. Air is not tangible. Air is not concrete. Just like by the animal, what's animating the animal is the air, ruach haim, and therefore it's not going to be a mechitza. So if what is filling up these balloons is going to be air, that's also not going to be a mechitza. But laman d'amar eino menes bidei adam sar harei. And now, if you're going to go with the position that it is not man-made, sar harei asui bidei adam. If I have inflated balloons, that's man-made. And so therefore, they would serve as wall. So the Gemara points out that it really is important in terms of how we're going to say it, that an animal is not a mechitza. And the Gemara says that inflated balloons would be a nafka mina based on the two ways in which we're going to say it. Okay? And that kind of takes us to the end of a lengthy discussion in the Gemara. The discussion started all the way back on Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, and now it's come to a conclusion on the top of Chav Dal Amud Beis. And now, to say it succinctly, Rav Meir says that if you're using an animal as a mechitza, it's not going to be a mechitza. The question is, why isn't it going to be a mechitza according to Rav Meir? So the answer is because an animal is not a mechitza. It's a fundamental point in the very definition of a mechitza. A mechitza cannot be an animal. Now, why not? One of two possibilities. Either number one is that that which is animating the animal, that which gives life and vitality to the animal, is going to be ruach. And since ruach is not a davar mamashis, it's not something which is tangible, which is something it's not a solid. So therefore, the animal simply cannot be viewed as a mechitza. Alternatively, an animal is simply not man-made. And so something which is not man-made cannot be made into a mechitza, cannot have the status of a mechitza. Amar Mar. Mishum Rabbi Yosef Galila Amar Af Ein Kosum Alav Gitei Nasha. So we're going to go back to a point that takes us all the way back to yesterday's daf, Chaf Gemam and Aleph, the sheet of Rabbi Yosef Galila, and that is that you cannot write a get on an animal. So my time at Rav Yosef Galila de Tanya. So the Gemara now wants to know what is the basis of this position. The Gemara quotes a brisa. Sefer. The Torah in Parshas Kisetze describes a get, and the pasuk goes on to say, ki yikach ish isha, ubalav ahia imlo simsachin be'inav, ki matza ba ervas davar v'kosav la, sefer krisos. V'nasam biyadav v'shilcha mi beiso. Beginning of the 24th parak in Devarim Parshas Kisetze, so the Torah gives us a description of the get. The Torah uses the word sefer. Ein le'ela sefer minan l'rabbos kol davar. Now I might have thought, had the Torah only said the word sefer, that you're only allowed to write a get on sefer, on parchment. How do I know that I can write a get on pretty much anything? Tamar lomar because of law mikom makom. So because of law tells me that you write it, and it could be on any item. Im kei ma tamar lomar sefer. Why would the Torah then point out to sefer? So lama lecha ma sefer davar shein baruach chaim ben eino ochel af kol davar shein baruach chaim ben eino ochel. So we look at a sefer as an example, and what are the characteristics of the sefer? It's something which is not alive and it's not edible. So the item in which you're writing on cannot be alive and it cannot be edible. Okay, this is just as a technical point. If we just follow the Gemara Kipshuto, so we have the word the cost of law, and then we have the word sefer. So what does that constitute? That is what's called a klal, followed then by a prat. So if it's a klal prat, so we know the rule, ain b'klal, ella masha b'prat. So the example is not just simply a paradigm, it's not a prototype, but it's really the only thing that you could use. So if it's klal prat, so then the Gemara over here does not make any sense. So as Tosfos points out over here, it's not a klal prat, really it's klal prat or klal. And the Gemara is giving it to us like in short version. But the truth of the matter is that the format over here, you can see Tosos, where Tosos understands that this is really klal uprat uklal. It's the first Tosos. So anyway, so that's why we're looking at Sefer not as the example, but just simply as a prototype, as a paradigm of an example. The Rabbanan. Anyway, that's all. That's all the sheet of Rav Yosef Galili, which tells me that you cannot write the get on an animal. The Chachamim would disagree. The Chachamim say that you are allowed to write a get on an animal. They don't have any limitation. So, ikas ha-basefer k'tagamar. If the pasuk would have said ba-sefer, so then I agree with you. But hashadichsif sefer l'sfiris devarim ba'ama hu da'asa. By virtue of the fact that it says sefer without the base, so it's not talking about the surface area and what you're writing on, but rather it's talking about the content of what you're writing, meaning that the get has to be very clear that this is going to be a bill of divorce. It's going to create separation between husband and wife. V'rabanan hai v'kasav mai darshibe. Now, according to the Chacham, what does it do with the word v'kasav? Meaning, once they give up on the drush of Rav Yossi Aglili, so the word v'kasav now becomes extraneous according to the Chacham. What do they do with that pasuk? Ha'u mi'bailei b'ksiva miskareshev v'in miskareshev b'kesef. So what they generate from the word because of law is that the only way that a get could be affected is only through a document, through a shtar, but not through money. As we just went over together in the pasuk, so the pasuk describes both marriage and divorce. That's what's called the hekesh. So mahavaya bekesef avyisiyah bekesef. So just like entering to marriage could be done either through money or through shtar. So I might have thought that exiting the marriage could also be done either through money and shtar. That's the havamina. That would have been the hekesh. So kamash malan. So the Torah, by writing the word v'kasav la, is telling me that no, that get can only be effectuated through contract, through shtar, but not through kesef. The Rabbi Yossi Aglili haisvar minale. How does Rabbi Yossi Aglili know this? Meaning the Gemara is assuming Rabbi Yossi Aglili agrees to this point, but does not have the psukim available to make this drasha. So how does he arrive at this conclusion? Mi sefer krisus nafkale. He learns it from where the Torah goes on to describe it as sefer krisus. All right, two psukim later. So sefer korsa vein davar acher korsa. Only the sefer can create the separation between them. Nothing else. The idach. Now, as far as the chachamim are concerned, what do they do with that pasuk? That pasuk tells me a different halacha according to the chachamim. The idach umi bailei l'davar hakoros beino levina, that which creates separation between him and her, meaning to say that the separation between husband and wife has to be a permanent separation. Kedetanya, the Gemara here quotes the Braisa, harei zegitecha menasha lo tishtiyayin. I'm going to give you this get, but only on contingency. And the contingency is that you're never allowed to drink wine again. Or you cannot go to your father's house. La'olam, under no circumstances and indefinitely. So this does not qualify as a get. Any get that has a string attached, any get that has a provision, a condition, and there is an indefinite term of the condition, so the get just simply not going to be a valid get. However, if the condition that's set forth is a limited condition, it has a term, it's for 30 days or for any limited amount of time, so then that is a condition that can be fulfilled, and there are, and the get does not have an indefinite string attachment between husband and wife, such a get would be a valid get. Really interesting. Rashi over here, Rashi says that if, let's say, for example, let's use the Gemara's example, where the get's going to be valid, but the condition has to be met for 30 days. So when is the get going to be effected? So Rashi says immediately. The moment that he hands her the get's going to be effected immediately. So as far as the condition is concerned, so she'll make sure to keep the condition. A careful reading of Rashi would seem to indicate, you could see Rashi, Dibur Hamaschil, Hari Zekrisus, Diachal Avolidei, HaPredel Sof Sholshim, Hilkach Me'achshem Muteros Linasei, Minatorah. So a real careful reading of Rashi would be that she'd be allowed to marry immediately, but that's Minatorah, which sounds like that, as far as the strict letter of the law is concerned, so she would be allowed to marry, but there's a Gzeira D'Rabbanan for understandable concern, meaning that if at any point in time within the 30 days she does not comply to the condition, so then retroactively the get's no good, so she's going to have to wait 30 days mid-D'Rabbanan. Rashi doesn't say that, but it certainly would seem to indicate that Rashi feels that way. The Idach, going back to the Gemara now, according to Rav Yosef Glili, how does he know this drasha? Meaning, how does he know that if there's a condition in the get that indefinitely attaches the husband and wife together, the get's not going to be a valid get? So Idach Mikaris Krisus Nafka. So by virtue of the fact that the Torah could have said the word Karis and it says the word Krisus, it allows for a double drasha. The Idach Karis Krisus Ladarshi, and the Chachamim do not feel that a double drasha in these circumstances are in fact warranted. They feel that there's only room for one drasha over here, not for two drashas. Okay, Adkan, that's the quick back and forth between Rav Yossi Galila and the Chachamim, and all this brings us to the beginning, where Rav Yossi Galila says that you're not allowed to write a get on an animal, and the Chachamim say you may, and it's basically based on how to understand the pasuk and the drasha of the word sefer. Is it talking about the item in which you're writing on, that's Rav Yossi Galila, or is it talking about the content of what you're writing? That is the Shita of the Chachamim. Akan, that takes us to the end of the first section of the Daf. I mean, more than halfway through, but So just as a quick recap, so on Chavdal Amid Aleph, the Gemara went through ironing out the Shitas of Rav Meir, where he is Choshish Lamisa, generally speaking, with the exception of Bekiyas HaNot, he's not worried about the jug breaking. The Gemara pointed out the distinction between the two. Rav Yehuda, on the other hand, who generally is not concerned about Misa, not by the animal, not by the Kohen, by the jug, it has nothing to do with his concern about the jug breaking. He's not concerned. That's not relevant to him at all. The jug, the reason why you cannot drink the jug and save the remainder for Trumas HaMaisos is because simply he doesn't subscribe to Breira. And the Gemara pointed out that once we resolve all the Shitas, but going back to why Rav Meir does not allow an animal to be used as a wall, so the Gemara notes that up until this point in time, we thought it had to do with Gzera. The Gemara noted it can't be Gzera. It's not Gzera, because we know that Rabbi Meir, by an animal being used as a gola, Rabbi Meir says that the animal is Tahor. If in fact, fundamentally, the animal is in fact considered a wall, so Rabbi Meir's position should be that it's Tami, not Tahor. Leading us to the Gemara's conclusion that the basis of Rameir Shita is not because of Gzera, but rather it's a fundamental issue. An animal simply cannot be viewed as a wall. An animal does not have the status of a wall, either because it's animated by air, or number two, is because it's not man-made. One of those two reasons, the Gemara pointed out, not committed between these two reasons. Anyway, that's the Shita of Meir. And then, from the top of Chavdal Amud Beis to the middle, the Gemara just went over the Shita of Rav Yosef Glili, was mentioned in the Brisa, on Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. So the Gemara just simply wanted to go through the drushes of what is the basis of the Shita of Rav Yosef Glili, that a get cannot be written on an animal. Continuing now, we're on the Mishnah on Chavdal Amud Beis. Ha'osa sukkasa bein ha'ilanos ve'ilanos defanos lakshera. You make a sukkah between the trees. The trees are serving as the walls of the sukkah. It would be a kasher sukkah. Okay, as Rashi points out over here, it is not that the tree is holding up the schach. Certainly the tree is not the schach, that's clear. We know that the tree cannot be the schach itself. We've already established that in the first parak of the Masechta, but the tree is not even holding up the schach. The tree is just simply serving as the walls of the sukkah. So the Mishnah says that it would be fine under those circumstances. The Gemara starts off the following discussion. Amar of Acher bar Yaakov. A statement made by Rav Acha bar Yaakov that when a wall cannot withstand a wind, so it's not going to be considered a wall. Rashi over here points out the chiddush of Rav Acha bar Yaakov is not that the wall is going to get knocked down by the wind. We've already had that discussion earlier in the Masechta regarding the beginning of the second parak, regarding the building of the sukkah on the top of a boat. Boat open to the strong breeze of the ocean, and the boat's going to fall down under the circumstances. Machlok is between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Gamliel whether such a sukkah would be a kasher sukkah. But that's not what we're discussing right now, says Rashi. Rav Acher bar Yaakov's point is the following: if your wall that you're making is so loose, it's so flimsy that it sways back and forth in the wind, so that's not going to be a wall. Take a look at Rashi, the first Rashi in the Gemara. She'ene chol amud baruch mitsuya, sha'ruach molicha umeviya. What the wind's going to do is this. The wind's going to push it back and forth. Kind of like a canvas sukkah. You have a canvas sukkah where the canvas is not taut, and the wind blows, so the canvas is going to go back and forth. Rav Acher bar Yaakov says that such a wall does not have the status of a wall, and obviously if it doesn't have the status of the wall, so you don't have a kasher sukkah. The Gemara is going to be attacking this position, Rav Acher bar Yaakov, from multiple sources. The Gemara is going to end up defending it every single time. Tonight, we start by quoting our Mishnah. So you're making a sukkah using trees as a wall, and the Mishnah says that the sukkah is a kasher sukkah. Vaka azav aseh. Now we're assuming over here that the tree is going to sway back and forth with the wind. And according to Rav Acher bar Yaakov, it simply should not qualify as a sukkah. V'asi hachi, v'hakazo v'asi, so hacha v'maiskin and bikashin. So the Gemara says, well, we're talking about a very thick tree with an extraordinarily thick trunk, and so therefore it's not swaying. V'aika nofo, the Gemara says, okay, but it still has branches, and the branches are swaying. So davile behutz v'dafna. So the Gemara says that what you're doing is you're reinforcing the branches. The Gemara's assumption over here, as Rashi explains, is that you're basically going to take other binding material, fronds and bamboo sticks, and you're going to reinforce it to the point where it doesn't sway at all. So the Gemara says, okay, so now we're using a tree as a wall. We've made sure to reinforce it so it doesn't sway at all within the wind. So the Gemara says, okay, so now what's the chiddush of the Mishnah? Isn't this point now obvious? You're allowed to make the walls of your sukkah using any material. So if it happens to be a tree, if the only thing the Mishnah is telling us is that I can use a tree, like, isn't that an obvious point? And why would the Mishnah need to tell us that? To which the response of the Gemara is, no. Ma'u detema nigzor demo asya li'shtamushe bi'ilan. So kamash malan. I might have thought that if I make use of the tree as a wall, I may end up using the tree. We know there's a gzera derabanan, that one's not allowed to use the tree on Shabbos and in Yom Tov. We already had a discussion, a debate earlier, in terms of when the sukkah is up in the tree, so you can't climb up an anyantif. Machlokis, in terms of whether you could use such a sukkah for sukkahs, whether it has to be a sukkah ru'i l'shiva or not ru'i l'shiva. Anyway, so I might have thought that if the tree is being used as a wall, so maybe the chachamim would extend the gzera, and the chachamim would say that I can't use such a sukkah because maybe I'll come to use the tree. So that's the hava. I mean, kamashvalan, the chiddush is no. The chachamim did not make such a gzera. The sukkah would in fact be a kasher sukkah. Tashma, the Gemara says, let's try this again. Hayisham ilan ugeder o mechitzas kanim nidam mishum diyumad. The Gemara goes back to the brackets that are described on Shabbos for the ole regalim, those that are making aliyah regal, so given a special dispensation that they can make a rishus yachid around a well. They have to stop over for Shabbos and it's hard for them to make a real structure in order to create a rishus yachid. So all they need to do is put four brackets in the four corners, each bracket going in amma in each direction, and now you have a rishus yachid. So the Bryce over here describes that that bracket could be made up of a tree or a fence or a gedder over here. Rashi says really is a pile of stone or a pile of wood or branches. So nido mishum diyoma. Now, obviously, over here you need the requisite dimensions, but provided that you have an ama going in each direction, so it can be viewed as a diyuman. So hasam nami mishum davile behutz of a dafna. The Gemara is bothered by the fact that we're talking about a tree, and the tree is going to be swaying. And aren't you concerned? So the Gemara says, no. Once again, we reinforced it, so it's not going to be swaying. Tashma ilan hamesa chalaritzi mei nofo gavo minar shol shetvach metaltan tachtav. The Gemara over here talks about a tree where it creates a canopy. The tree itself is creating a canopy. The branches extend all the way down, right? If you can imagine, a weeping willow, for example, would probably be a wonderful example of this idea, where the tree obviously starts at the center, branches go over the sides. It creates a natural canopy. As long as the branches go down within three tefachim of the ground, so now what you have is a naturally enclosed area. It's a rishus yachid. So the Gemara says, "Amai hakaz of asay." So the Gemara says once again, "Isn't the branches swaying back and forth, and therefore it would not qualify as a wall, and therefore you don't have a rishus yachid?" So hasanami davile behutz of a dafna. At this point in time, we already know what the Gemara is going to answer. But as a formality, the Gemara goes through each Q and each A, and the A over here is the same answer, and that is that we reinforce the walls. The hachi nitata bekule. So the Gemara says, so we reinforced it. So at this point in time now, so we've not only have a natural canopy, but with reinforcement, we also fortified it and we really made it now into a private area. And meanwhile, Alam Amar Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua, statement made by Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua, which is, Ein Metaltel Bo Ela Beis HaSayin, that I can only carry within the area up only when the area is no greater than 5,000 square amos. So mishum dehave diri shetash mishelaver v'chol diri shetash mishelaver imataltan bo alas asayin. To which the Gemara's response is that that has nothing to do with the status of the walls. The walls are good walls. That is not open for discussion. Once the walls have been fortified, so at this point in time we know that the walls are valid walls. The issue over here is that It is not made for a residential area, specifically an internal residential area, meaning that the primary usage of the area under the tree is for guards who are, they're going to be sitting in the tree, but only to watch the fields that are outside of the area of the tree. So the reason why you are limited to only 5,000 square amas is only because of the rules of Karpov / Karmelis, that when you have an enclosed area, but it's non-residential, so then they're capped in terms of how large it can be. It cannot be more than 5,000 square amas. Once it's more than 5,000 square amas, So then you are not allowed to carry in that area any more than four amos, obviously from where you started. So it's not a function of the walls. It's just simply a function of the fact that it's not a residential area. And the chiddush over here is that even though it is made for a guard, but its primary purpose, its primary function is not for its internal use, but rather to see what's going on outside of the tree. And therefore it has the status of a karpuf. Tashma, we get to do this one more time. Shabbos Batel, let's say you spend Shabbos either on a mound, Shua Gavo Asar, the mound is 10 Tfachim Havu, Huma Arba Amos Ad Beis Asayim, anywhere from 4 Amos to 5,000 square Amos. Same thing with a valley in the ground. So once again, you have natural walls surrounding you, and it could be anywhere from 4 amas to 5,000 square amas. Again, the cap over here of 5,000 square amas is because this was not bounded as residential area. And so therefore, you have a cap of 5,000 square amas. That's the rules of Karpov. V'chein kama kitzur v'shibos mekifos osa mehalaches kula v'chuzala alpayim amas. So, and finally, the cornfield. So the cornfield where basically you harvested the center of the cornfield, and now you're being surrounded by the walls of the corn, the ears of corn, the chaff of corn. And so again, anywhere from 4 to 5,000 square amas. So you now have an enclosed area. And furthermore, you can also start making your 2,000 amma walk once you leave the area. But you have that whole area as being your area. So Afa Gav the cause of Asing. So the Gemara says now, specifically in this last case over here of our cornfield, where the walls are being created by the chaffs of corn. So the wind blows, and they're going to be blowing in the wind. They're going to be swaying in the wind. And again, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov says that would not be considered a wall. So Hasam Nami Davile Behutza V'Dafna. So the Gemara says the same thing over there that they were fortified. Basically, once again, you added fronds. You wove more. More material into it so that when the wind blows, it doesn't sway back and forth. So again, same defense. It comes out to be exactly the same point, is that when it's fortified and it's not swaying within the wind, so then it in fact would be a kosher wall, and obviously you have an enclosed area. Okay, Atkan, so the Gemara has defended Rav Acha Bar Yaakov throughout, and what comes down now from the Gemara is that if your wall swaying within the wind, so Rav Acha Bar Yaakov's position, which has been defended, is in fact that would not be a wall. Obviously, it forces us to ask the question. So if you have a sukkah and it's made out of a canvas material, and there is a little bit of sway in that canvas material, would in fact that be a kosher sukkah? So it happens to be that not all canvas sukkahs are the same. So this is a great opportunity to go to your local rav and ask him how he interprets the rule specific to you, your canvas sukkah. In other words, I get to punt on this question. One of the few advantages I have of just teaching the daf. Okay, quick recap of the daf today. After concluding from yesterday's daf that for a mayor, the reason why you cannot use an animal as a mechitza is because, according to Abaye, we're concerned that the animal may die, shrivel, and then not meet the requisite 10 tfachim that the animal needs to be in order to make a kasha wall. That is all as per the shita of Abaye, with the Gemara's lengthy discussion of how does Abaye's understanding of Rav Meir conform to other shitas of Abaye of Rav Meir throughout Shas? But in other words, that is all approach number one that took us through the first half of today's daf all the way to the bottom of Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, where there the Gemara asked a bomb question, which is that it comes out that according to Rav Meir, that fundamentally, in fact, the animal is considered a mechitza, so when the animal is going to be used as a gola, we would expect Rav Meir to say that it is Tameh, but Rav Meir doesn't say that. Rav Meir says that it's Tahor. What it therefore forces us to do is to totally rethink Rav Meir and to come to the realization that according to Rav Meir, an animal is not a wall. Fundamentally, an animal is not a wall. Why is that? Two reasons the Gemara says. Either number one, because it is being animated by Ruach. It's this ethereal entity that's holding the animal up, that's giving the animal its vitality, the Ruachayim. Or the other possibility is that it's just simply not man-made, and therefore it can't be viewed as a mechitza. Good. The Gemara gives a nafkamina. That takes us to the first half of today's daf. Then on the Chav Dalet Amud Beis, the Gemara first took us through the sheet of Rav Yosi Aglili, mentioned on Chav Gimel. So the Gemara explored it just a little bit the idea that you do not write a get on an animal. You cannot write a get on an animal. What is the basis of the sheet of Rav Yossi Galili? So it's a drasha. And the Gemara goes through the back and forth with how Rav Yossi Galili darshan is a pasuk. How do the Chachamim counter that drasha? What drasha do they give to that pasuk? And then the classic back and forth of, well, if that's what you're going to do there, so how are you going to get this halacha? How did you get that halacha? Where are you going to, and the classic back and forth that goes along with conflicting understandings of how to darshan a particular pasuk and the domino effect it has on other halachas and other pesukim. Finally, the last part of today's daf is we learned a short mishnah. The mishnah says that if you make a sukkah and the trees are just being used as the walls, so that would in fact be a kosher sukkah. The Gemara contends with the statement of Rav Acha bar Yaakov that if you have a wall where it sways within the wind, so that does not qualify as a mechitza, and therefore whatever it is servicing as a mechitza simply will not be serviced as a mechitza because it just simply does not have the status of mechitza. That's the opinion of Rav Acha bar Yaakov. The Gemara attacked it from many different perspectives, but ultimately the Gemara defended the shita of Rav Acha bar Yaakov, bringing us to the Mishnah on Chaf Hamad Aleph.